The middle of chapter 26 in the top numbers, it's 284, which would be Kufmem Beis Amud Beis. In the beginning of the chapter, he quoted a Raya Mehemna stating that nowadays the world is governed by the Chet Eitz Hadas, by the tree of, not the Chet, but the Eitz Hadas, the tree of knowledge. And therefore, the study of that we are engaged in involves things which are kosher and unkosher, and fit and unfit, and pure and unpure. And even more than that, because of the nature of the dominance of the Eitz Hadas, so Talmidei Chachamim have to rely on the masses for their sustenance. Okay, that's what we talked about up until this point. Okay, so now, in this next section, which I'm planning to do the whole thing, he asks three questions on this piece of Zohar. Now, normally, you're not supposed to stop on an answer, but the questions are going to take an hour to discuss, so we're not going to have time to answer them because it answers the rest of the chapter, and it is one of the longer letters.
Tanya for 800.
Yes.
Okay. It doesn't go that quick.
Yes. So, starting at Vihine, and it's the big word on page 284, mm-hmm. and it's the first paragraph on the left side, now at first glance. So, this is interesting. Here, Hamuvan Bahashkafa Rishina. There is a Talmudic rule that whenever you say, like, l'cha'era, or it seems like it would be, or at first glance, or any of those expressions, this itself is actually an expression of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Because more than likely what's going to happen is when we say at first glance we have a problem, the second glance is you have no problem. Because what's the whole deal with asking a question? Why do you ask a question? We don't ask a question just to have a question. We ask a question to get an answer. So the question itself is actually an expression of, having the question is an expression of Eitz Hadas.
Yes.
Does that mean that the questions are evil? No.
Negative.
No. On the contrary, the question, especially like in a Gemara, the question itself is Torah.
Right.
Okay, one of the things which was very difficult when I began learning Gemara way back when is that you have to spend lots of time understanding why the question is a question even. It's enough. Okay, one thing is that you understand the question. Got the question? Yeah. But now do you understand why the question is a question? Why is this rabbi going to the trouble, especially if you're talking about in the Gemara, going to all the trouble to ask this question? And it is because of the question asking which spurs on an answer, which spurs on another question, is it that we are able to remove all that extraneous husk matter, in this case the Torah stuff, and come up with the kernel, the fruit, which is the final decision, the halacha, whatever is the conclusion, whatever that happens to be. As it is with when, for example, if you want to eat an orange, well, you could take a bite out of it, but it's not going to be the greatest experience that you ever had. That was one of those things that was like a classic thing to do to a new immigrant, was to hand them a banana and say, this is an American fruit. And just say, take a bite out of it. And the guy would take a bite out of the banana, and everybody would laugh. Ha, ha, ha. You're supposed to peel the thing. You know, so this is the process by which it's absolutely necessary in order to come to the conclusion. And just like the skin or the shell, the skin is very much necessary because what the question does is it contains the answer. Okay? If you have that question, the answer is already there. Okay, so now, why do we say that this is from, we always associate, and this will be going to be his first question, we always associate the tree of knowledge of good and evil with something wrong. Okay, Adam did something wrong, and therefore he got to know that he was naked. Okay, before that, there was nothing wrong. He didn't know that he was naked. Was he naked? Yeah, he was naked. Did he know about it? No, he didn't know about it. That was what was wrong about it, is that he knew about it. Okay, so it would have been the same thing. For example, the giving of the Torah was the antidote to the Tree of Knowledge. For those 40 days that Moshe was on the mountain, the world reverted back to a pre-Sin of Tree of Knowledge state, plus clothes. Everybody was still wearing clothing, but there was no such thing at that point as good and evil. People didn't die, people didn't get sick, there were no wars. Now, what would have been then had Moshe come down the mountain and they didn't do the golden calf, which was the antithesis of the giving of the Torah? So we would have had a commandment, remember the Shabbos to keep it holy. And automatically we would have known exactly all what that would have meant. Oh, I have 39 malachas I'm not allowed to do, and all the rabbinic things that are not supposed to be done. It would have just been all understood. Of course, I know what it means. Remember the Shabbos to keep it holy. And we wouldn't have required all the explanations of it and the back and forth, because we would have just had the fruit without all the shells. But since it is then that we are in this situation now, so what it does is not that we appreciate what we have more. What it does is it actually gives us greater depth of understanding because we have this pilpul. He talks about that in the next section of this letter, this idea of pilpulim, which the word pilpul, which is a debate or deliberation, is the same root as the word pepper. Pepper in Hebrew is also pilpul. Okay, so meaning to say that if you want something spiced up, you got a little pepper to it. Okay? Cha'era. This is the same, it should be said. Even moving mashkafa rishona l'cha'era. At first glance, is where this whole thing fits in. U'malashin zeh ha'maimer l'chasiri meida. Now, for those people that are lovers of knowledge, in the English, he translates it as those people who are intellectually motivated, intelligent, yes. So that which appears to those who love knowledge, meaning, even in this statement itself, the expression that he learned, he could have used hamaskilin, the intellectuals, if he wanted to say that there. But he uses the expression l'chasiri meida, which literally means those people who love knowledge, meaning to say that the whole modus operandi of the world after Chet Eitz Hadas, and the world is run by the influences of the tree of knowledge, it brings about a love of knowledge. Shalimad Isir Vaheta Vesedah Taharas Hume Elana Detev Melrat Milvad Vilvad. It says, wait, you're learning about prohibited things and permitted things. And you're learning the whole order of what makes things falls into the category of Seda Tahara, with the keeping of things, the laws of purity. And you can tell me that is from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Milvachuhu Pella Guddle. He says, aside from that this is a Pella Guddle. It's actually interesting the way he introduces it. He's got three questions that come from now until the end of this section. One he says is a Pella. The next one he says is a Pella Uplay, which means a wondrous wonder. And the third one he says, Pella Uplay, he says it's three times a wonder. So he's got three questions. We're going up. We got an easier question, a harder question, and then the hardest question. But it's not, even he says it's Pella Guddle, it's not just a Pella, it's not just a wonder, it's a Pella Guddle. This is actually quite a serious concept to be thrown around. Machmas Asvi V'seisir Pshuta HaKesuvim U'medrasher B'sein Azal. Okay, it's absolutely contradictory to what our sages say, what's written in all the books and in all the psukim. Shekol HaTerah HaNiglis Lana L'Vanein HaNikra Eitz HaChaim L'Machzikim Ba. There's a pasuk, Eitz Chaim Hila Machzikim Ba, right? It's a tree of life. What is that talking about? That's talking about the Torah. That's not talking about the five books. That's talking about the Torah Shebal Peh. It's called an Eitz Chaim. And here we want to say that what The Torah as we have it now is under the dominion of the Eitz Hadas. We have a pasuk that contradicts that. The pasuk says no, the Torah is an expression of Eitz Chaim, the tree of life. So what's this business that the Zohar's talking about, that the Raya Mahamna quotes, that the you have to be under this dominion, and it's not, you know, from now, it's going to be that we, because of that, that the Talmid HaChachamim have to be supported by the masses, and when Mashiach comes, the whole thing's going to change around, and then the Talmid HaChachamim will be supporting the masses. So the whole thing is very strange. It should have said, it's considered Eitz Chaim. V'loy Sefer HaZohar Levad. Not just the Zohar is called Eitz Chaim, not just Pnimi HaSeter is called the Tree of Life. U'prat Shehaya Ganez B'Yameyam. For sure not, because there had to be this expression of Tree of Life back then. What happened for the most part when the Zohar was compiled approximately 1900 years ago, it was not put together to be popular bedtime reading. The Rashbi, the Rosh Shimon Bar Yochai, made it in such a way that people would stay away from it. He wrote it in very difficult jargon, as opposed to Rebbe Yehuda. The Rebbe Yehuda wrote it in the Mishnah, in the simplest, most possibly easiest understandable Hebrew, because he wanted it to be for the masses. Likewise, also Ravina and Ravashi, that wrote theirs in the vernacular specifically, they wrote the Gemara in street language. Specifically, okay, so that when they moved out of Babylon, it didn't help because we didn't speak that street anymore. But for that time, and for however long they were speaking that Aramaic, that was common talk. Shimon Bar Yochai lived in Israel. And he lived in Israel when there was a lot of people who lived in Israel. He could have just as easily written the Zohar in Hebrew, but chose specific. Or if he's not going to write it in Hebrew, he could have written it in an easier language. But no, he decided to write it in this New York Times classy Aramaic. And even on top of that, it was Ganez B'Yameyam. People didn't even know about it. How many people were studying at that time? Not many. V'gam kol chachma ha-kabbalah ha-isa nistara b'yameyam v'nelma mikol talmid ha-chachamim. And for the most part, people who referred to themselves as talmid ha-chachamim, great scholars, didn't know these concepts. I'll explain this in a second. Kin li'chudi segula, certain select few. That's the way it always was. From the time of Shimon Bar Yochai until the time of the Arizal and the effect of movable type, the Gutenberg press, etc., and all the other Jewish printing houses in Italy and in Germany, and then later on in Poland and in Russia, people saw that it became a cost-effective thing to also print up these books as well, with these hidden thoughts. And you can understand it. If a book is going to be written, if you're going to be rich enough that you can afford a book. Okay, so for the most part, what is it that people were paying for? Is they're paying for the stuff they could learn. And if you're a scribe and you're thinking, someday somebody's going to ask me to produce a book, so I'm going to get started on it now, so I don't have to wait so long. So what's he going to produce? A Zohar? No, he's not going to write a Zohar. Something that's going to get used. Something's got some saleability street over here. Value. Yeah. The Afghan Zeis Bahatsanas Lachas. And even then, those people who, that small group that knew about the Zohar, even during that whole time, you're talking 1400 years, they didn't let people know that they knew it. That's why there is a misconception by academicians, specifically, that you've known my opinion of Jewish academicians, that the Zohar was written in the 1400s. Mm. Why? Because nobody knew about it. There were just how many existent copies? Rashi didn't write a commentary on the Zohar. Rashi wrote a commentary on Chumash. He wrote a commentary on Nach. He wrote a commentary on Gemara. He wrote a commentary on Midrash. Okay, I don't know what else he wrote a commentary on. I haven't seen it lately. I think maybe there's a commentary on Sefer Yetzirah. I don't know. He did not write a commentary on Zohar. Why? He didn't have one. Because if he had one, he would have written a commentary on that too.
Of course.
And that would have made learning Zohar piece of cake. Okay? And if the world wasn't ready for the Zohar to be a piece of cake.
Right.
It was the same deal also, you know, Targum Yonason ben Uzziel was the first classical translation of Tanakh. Okay? The insights that he has, when you're learning, if you're learning Rashi in a little in-depth a little bit, and you look over in Yonason ben Uzziel, that Yonason ben Uzziel lived, he was a student of Hillel, so he lived before Rashi. Rashi was 900. He lived 1,000 years before Rashi. Okay? So whatever Rashi said is, for the most part, it's in Yonason ben Uzziel. Rashi may, you know, the commentaries might say in your books, like it says where he got it from. And it will be written in a Medrash, a Mechilta, a Gemara. Mm-hmm. There's a very good possibility he got it from Yonason ben Uzziel. Yonason ben Uzziel died before he translated the book of Daniel.
Hmm.
Why? So I think it's in Masechta Megillah. Why? Because in Masechta Megillah, it says when Mashiach is coming, who Mashiach is, and he would have translated, it's written there very quick, cryptically, and he would have translated, oh, by the way, Mashiach is coming in the year 5776, sometime around before Pesach time, maybe even before Purim. And Hashem said, no, 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 no. We can't let people know in the year 2776, the Mashiach is not coming for 2,000 years.
Right.
So Yonason ben Uzziel was well on his way. He was going to do it. He was going to sit down, write it down. God said, nope. Sucked him right back up. Gone. Mm-hmm. No Yonason ben. There's no Targum on Sefer Daniel. Okay, so these people, it wasn't popularized, it was never supposed to be popularized. The Loibi Rabin, it was not, people in the masses didn't do it, Kadiza B'Gemara. The Gemara even talks about this. This led those people, even in the times of the Vilna Gaon, to say that you shouldn't be studying Chochmas Nisteres, you know, the secrets of the Torah, until your boich is filled with the meat and potatoes of Gemara and Poiskim.
Hmm.
Okay, that was the whole thing. You should be 40 years old, and you should have kids, and etc., etc., all that other stuff. Anech deketag. There's no reason for it, as he says right now. Kamoshe Kosev Arizal, the Dafke Bedeiros Eilu Achronim Mutar B'Mitzvos Legalos Zeisa Chochma. Specifically, in our generation, the Arizal wrote this in the 1550s, that specifically now we need to be learning this stuff. The Eitz Chaim that the Arizal dictated was meant to be a work that everybody should have on their shelf. Mm. You're going to need a teacher to learn it, because that's the Moshe Kodavera coined the term Kabbalah. Kabbalah means it is a tradition, it's received. You're going to need somebody to explain it to you, because we saw already in chapter 7 of Shar Yechud V'Amunah, what happens if you don't have a teacher is you make the same mistake that, or you make a mistake like the Vilna Gaon made a mistake, right. And who's going to tell the Vilna Gaon he made a mistake? And the reason why he misinterpreted the Arizal's writing is because he didn't have a teacher. Because he figured, listen, if he could go through Shas weekly and go through the entire Shulchan Aruch a couple every day, and he's writing all this stuff, so he could know what the Arizal says. What's the big deal? It just so happens he made a mistake that cost Judaism 200 years of denial of Hashgacha Pratis. That's all. Shalonitin Rishus Legalus Rirach Loi Olachaver Olavadim. That, but the times of the Zohar, they only had permission to talk about it in and of themselves. It's a very interesting thing. That there's a famous, there's many stories that come out of the famous Zlobiner wedding. The Zlobiner wedding, Zlobin was a city that was located in between Liadi and Berdichev, because there's a wedding involving the Alter Rebbe's granddaughter, and Olivia Sagbardichev's son, which is unfortunately the subject of two letters from after this one because he passed away. So they decided, what are they going to do? Is so that there shouldn't be too much, listen, wear and tear on people, drap and force. So it wasn't where they decided they're going to make the wedding right in between. Okay, and there's a zillion stories about these two great dynasties that ascended on this little village. The Alter Rebbe asked the Mittler Rebbe, have you gone and give Shalom Aleichem to your Machutin? It's their kids are getting married. He's just the grandfather. So he said he's afraid of him. He says, what are you afraid of him for? He says he's mad at me that I say Chassidus. So the Alter Rebbe went and talked to him. And he says, I understand that you have a bone to pick with my Beryl about the fact that he says Chassidus. And Levi Yitzhak Disha did not mince any words. He said, you know that it was our understanding that only those people who heard from the Mittler Rebbe are allowed to say Chassidus. So the Alter Rebbe said, Aber Erkan. He knows this stuff. Why shouldn't he say it? He says, Erkan, Weizmir. He knows it. Show me. Okay, so he went back and he got his son. And he said, your Machutin wants you to say Chassidus. So he discussed it and he said, I will, on condition that he doesn't interrupt me and he doesn't contradict me. Okay, that was the condition. Okay. So Levi Yitzhak, he was sitting in the chair, and Alter Rebbe, and the Mittler Rebbe was sitting in the chair, and the Mittler Rebbe started saying Chassidus. He started saying a mimer. Okay, we know the Mittler Rebbe, that he had Harchavas Hanar, today's Hayayim Yayim, was that the Mittler Rebbe would be saying Chassidus, and the shul would be packed, and everybody would be hanging on every word, and it would be as you could hear a pin drop fall. And suddenly, in the middle of his saying, he would say, Shasha. Why? Because his own brain was going so fast, his mouth couldn't get the words out fast enough. He had to tell himself, listen, could you slow down a little bit back there? Just you'll get your turn. Wait. Stop. Okay. So the Mittler Rebbe went on. We see that there are Maimarim from the Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe, they're 170 pages long. I don't know who stood there and remembered them. Okay. I had enough problems when the Rebbe would say a mimer for 15 minutes. Never mind, a 170-page mimer must have taken many hours, 4-6 hours to say. You know, and that would have been the whole for Brian, because you can understand, after he got done with it, he must have been exhausted. So he started saying, and Levi Yitzhak started squirming in his chair, and then after about I don't know how long, he stood up and said, that's it, stop, I can't take anymore. And he gave him a kiss on his forehead, and he said, he can't remember what they said, he can, or he called him Rebbe, I don't know exactly what happened. So now, they came and said, hey, it's time for the chasana. You guys got to go. Okay? So they started, the doors open. So the Levi Yitzhak Bardichev said, my Machutin goes first, he's smarter than I am. So the Mittler Rebbe said, how could I walk through the door before my father? The Alter Rebbe said, Levi Yitzhak Bardichev is older than me. How could I go throughout him? This is going back and forth and back and forth. This is no after you. This is three people. They're not going through the door. The Hasidim are standing on the outside of this open door watching this whole thing down. It says that they broke open the wall and they all walked out all together. Leave it to Hasidim. Okay, So there was a time even among the close disciples, why am I telling this story? There was a time even among the close disciples of the Mezitcher Magid that, yeah. Just keep a wrap on it, keep it low, yeah. Okay? But, and this is the subject for the first third of Inyan HaShel Teres HaChassidus, on the essence of Chassidus, is why do we need Chassidus now? Okay. Okay, and he says, so what's the Pella? It says even more wonder this. I'm going to say, Pelia Nisgava. There's even a greater wonder. Lafiza lo haya limit iser vehatir vekol shekain dini mama nais deichin mitzvahs tefillin shetikna alpi steya seides hazoyhar v'yichodim el yonim liyodeim kirash b'machaverov. It says that the Rash Shimon Bar Yochai and anybody else who's tarasi umanasi, these are guys that are sitting and learning 20 hours a day. Okay, and they didn't do anything; they just sat and they learned, and God paid the bills. What were they doing? They were sitting and learning. And what were they learning? Iser v'heter. Things that are permitted, things that are forbidden. And they didn't even daven. And davening, not even, says Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, is going to say, not even Kriya Shema, which is from the Torah. Because we know how Isak v'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. Anybody who's occupied in doing a mitzvah doesn't have to do another mitzvah. So these guys never stopped learning Torah. So they're involved with the mitzvah of learning Torah. So they didn't have to do the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, even. Okay, so these people, and what's davening? The davening that was put together by the Anshes Knesset HaGedolah was for the purpose of misyachadim yichudim, for creating all kinds of unifications between us and Hashem into this world. It's a tremendous tool for bringing down godliness. They didn't daven. Davening, we can understand, davening is really not part of Eitz HaChaim. There's no Eitz HaDas. There's no arguments in davening. You don't have one guy says this and the other guy says, we're not saying that in davening. And even the Yezehu Menkomen, for example, which is a parak of Mishnayos. Why, one of the reasons why that was taken, aside from the content of it, or maybe it's the reason why Rabbi Yehuda set it up that way, why specifically that's the parak of Mishnayos that we say, in order to be Yoitzi, limit of Mishnayos every single day, is because there's no arguments in it. There's nobody says, this guy says this, and then Rabbi Yehuda says such and such. Rabbi Shimon says, you know, I'm a Rabbi Akiva. No. It's the only parak in the entire Shas that there's no arguments. So we say, listen, okay, you got to learn a parak Mishnayos before davening, but we're not going to get your head into this pilpulim stuff over here. Just say the words over there. Understand that what you're talking about is the procedures in the Beis HaMikdash, and it should be a vehicle for you getting into your davening over there, because this is going to be that your words are taking the place of the karbonis that you're learning about at this point. Shimon Bar Yochai, who wrote the Zohar, didn't daven. Because he's too busy learning. So if it's from Eitz HaDas, the learning business, and davening is from Eitz HaChaim, what's he doing? It's obviously, there's got to be something going on over here that we don't understand fully about the ramifications of the Torah that we have now being an expression of Eitz HaDas. You understand that question? It's a little bit difficult to guess. He's not done asking the question. It says that the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and all of his friends, they didn't stop davening, even if they were engaged in the most mundane aspects of the Torah. They're sitting and learning about an ox goring a cow. And it's got all the things like Rabbi Yehuda, that all the laws of Zikin go according to Rabbi Yehuda. Avafilo hachi lo havi matzli elametleisin yaimim letleisin yainim. When did they daven? They daven once every 30 days. They figure it's a new month. It's in the word month in Hebrew is chaydish. So the word chaydish comes from the word chidish, meaning new, chadash, meaning new. So there's a new month here. So we got to, okay, we'll daven during the month. We have a month that goes by. But even that, Kadmahadu Talmuda, after, when would they do it? Is it would take them a month to go through everything that they knew. During the times of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, there wasn't Shas. There wasn't 60 Masechtas. There were 600 Masechtas. They all got condensed in the period of writing them all down. So there was a whole lot more to review during Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's time. It would take him an entire, because otherwise it would just be Shisa Mishna Mishnah. If a person's going to sit for 20 hours a day in Chazer Mishnayos, he could be done with it in 2 days. Okay. I happen to know of a fellow who was a Lubavitcher, who was a mailman. He was a mail sorter specifically. And he had this job for, I don't know, 40 years sorting the mail. And he worked 6 days a week. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I don't know if you know how he worked Friday. Maybe he worked mostly Shabbos. Yeah, he worked mostly Shabbos, yeah. He had to go in at 12 o'clock. He worked from 12 to 8. 12 a.m. to 8 a.m. So he worked Saturday night through Thursday night. And for 8 hours, he would go through a Seder Mishnayos. So that on Sunday he went through Zroim, and Monday he went through Zmanim, and Wednesday he went through Nashim, so that on Friday he went through Taurus, and once a week he finished the Mishnayos. So that took him 40 hours to Chazer Mishnayos. And he wasn't just sitting in Chazer Mishnayos, he was sorting mail, so that probably slowed him down. So for sure, if you're learning 20 hours a day, you can knock off what we have as Mishnayos for within, you know, less than 2 days. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai had 600 Mesechtes to go through, and it took 30 days. And when he was done with the 30 days of we got to start all over again. So it was like, we took a break. Oh, since we took a break, let's say Shema. And that's when he would say the Shema. And even then, that, and when he would do it, is when would Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai say Shema? Well, Shema is all psukim. So when he was learning, reviewing the psukim, so he would stop and say the Shema, since he's engaged in psukim anyway, but not to interrupt his Mishnayos to say pesukim. Okay, because it says, for example, now, everybody here, when you were like 4 years older and change or whatever, so you were learning Aleph Beis. And when you're learning Aleph Beis, so you're sitting there and you're going, this is an Aleph and this is a Kametz, and you're going, Kametz, Aleph, oh. We all had to go through this process to learn Hebrew. Okay, so for this person who's doing it, let's say the person was an adult over bar mitzvah, never learned how to read. So him doing this is going Kametz Aleph Al. So that person right now is studying Torah. What would be if I would take the book off the shelf right now and I would open up to the page, the one in the second page of the Siddur over there with all the Nakudas and the letters, and I would go Kametz Aleph, Ah, Kametz Beis, Ba, Kametz Gimel, Ga. I would be what would be known in the vernacular as wasting time. Many years ago when I was just learning it, that's called learning Torah. No. Now, that's called wasting time because I've progressed to the point where that's considered not like nothing. So it says that a person who can learn Gemara and learns Mishnah is guilty of Bittul Torah. And a person who can learn Mishnah and learns Psukim is guilty of Bittul Torah. That's what it says. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was not going to interrupt his Mishnah in order to say Psukim. So when did he say the Shema every 30 days? He said it when he was in the middle of learning Psukim anyway. So since he's not going to interrupt his learning, he's going to interrupt his learning. It'll only be the learning that he did for the Psukim. For sure, because lo chilek bein seder zroim moed kochim v'taharis l'nezikin. Because for Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, it didn't make any difference what he was learning. If he's learning about agricultural laws or holidays or sacrifices, or if he's learning about ritual impurity, or all of that, the same, it was just the same thing as he's learning about, like if he was learning a cow getting gored by an ox. Didn't make any difference. It's all on the same level. Even though it says elsewhere that the six Sidrei Mishnah correspond to different spheres. The Zeraim corresponds to Malchus. I don't know if you remember them so much. And Taharis corresponds to Chachma. You get the idea. There are different levels of it. Shimon Bar Yochai, it's all Mishnah. It's all the same. But then he says that he's got a note over here. Very interesting note. It says, so Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai would have said, I'm going to say Shema when I'm doing Psukim. And I'm not going to interrupt my Mishnah, but he says, wait a minute. Vesesu das atme, barayim ahem de bekamim kemes. He himself says exactly the opposite. Shimon bo Yochai says in many places that psukim are on a higher level than Mishnah. The Mishnah ihu shivcha, he calls in the Zohar, Mishnah is referred to as the shivcha, the handmaiden. V'hamikra hu teras maisha hu adifa mekabela dihu matronisa. And the psukim, which that's that, he says, the psukim, which that's the Torah that Moshe taught. And Moshe wrote it down. So this is the handwork of Moshe that he heard from Hashem. He calls that matronisa. He calls that the mother. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai himself says, from this aspect, psukim are on a higher level. That's only because of what their source is. That's how we answer that one. But I'm having a sham v'teira shebiksav hu malka, that the written Torah is the queen. The hainu yisaid abba hamalubash v'za, kamoshe goes of a rizal, and then in the note, the side point of the side point, he says, because this is yisaid coming from chachma, which is included into the emotions and explained by the rizal, and that's actually why the answer to this problem is because in its source, the reason why psukim are on a lower level, and why we start learning with a kid. First, we teach them psukim, and then we teach them Mishnah, and then we teach them Gemara, and then they start learning Kabbalah, is because in order to come down low, it has to have a higher source. That's generally the rule. That which is lower comes down, that which is higher comes down lower. So psukim come from a higher source. That's why Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai called them the matron, rather than the Mishnah, which that is comes from a lower source than the Pesukim. So he called that the handmaid. So no contradiction, no problem. V'gam pilpul hakushiyos v'tirutzim de sitra de rava ruach atumah eshkachan v'rashbi de isik bei tuva. And you see also, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, the Rebbe was wont to point it out, especially on Lag Ba'omer, there are many arguments in the Mishnah and the Gemara, the Talmud Bavli as we have it. There is one person whose name appears in every chapter of Gemara. Rav Shimon bar Yochai. So Shimon bar Yochai, we want to say that his whole thing, there just shouldn't be any arguments. He's the one who does the most arguing. Ad kidei kach, so much so that he appears so often and so much with a dissenting opinion that the rule is kedai lismach Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai v'shasad chak. If you're in a situation of duress and you really need it, you can rely on Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's opinion. Even though, for the most part, the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. I don't know enough of how the halachas are developed to say, oh, this one's like Rabbi Shimon and this one's not like Rabbi Shimon, but enough of the halachas are not like Rabbi Shimon so that the Gemara says, oh, if you're really stuck and you find yourself like in deep trouble, do Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says. I don't think Hashem is going to complain. Okay, so this is a standard answer. Since we're talking about Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Kedai Lishmacha Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, so with my wife was pregnant with our number four. So we went to how long was she? She was born in January, so this would have been May. How many months before that is seven? So she's 3 months pregnant. 2.5 months, 3 months pregnant. So we went to the doctor, and the doctor said, as maybe the first or second time that we actually went because of this pregnancy, the doctor said, I don't like what I see. This is on a Friday. Said, come back to me on Monday, and if need be, I will have to write you a referral, because he was a firm guy and he did not do abortions. Even if it was necessary, he said, this could be very serious. Okay? So, my totally flipped me and my wife out. Sure. Absolutely, totally.
Yeah, sure.
So, that Sunday was Lag Ba'omer. So, my wife said, we have to write the Rebbe immediately. And I said, let's wait for Lag BaOmer. Okay, because it's known in among Chassidim that it talks about the Mittler Rebbe would go out to the field and they'd have eggs and they'd have some mashke over there and they would do whatever they did. He'd say Chassidus, and it said people would see miracles by the buckets, especially involving children. And there's all kinds of stories with the Rebbe's and Lag BaOmer. So I wrote Lag BaOmer. I called up. I didn't write. I called up 9 o'clock in the morning. Benjamin Klein answered the phone. So I told them the whole problem, and we wanted a bracha for a full-term birth with an easy labor and gesund for the mother and the child. Okay, it was 9 o'clock. So he told me, I don't know what to tell you. The Rebbe is going to come at 10 o'clock. And then at 11 o'clock, he's going to address the parade. And he's going to stay at the parade until about 1. And at 1 o'clock, he's then going to go to the mikveh. And after the mikveh, which takes an hour, he's then going to go come back. He's going to go to the oil. He's going to stay at the oil all night, probably till about 8:30, 9 o'clock. He'll daven mincha ma'ariv, and tonight there'll be a farbringen at 9:30. I don't know if the Rebbe is going to get to your question today. So I said, you do what you have to do. I'm going to say 5 after 10, but I think it was 10 after 10. We got a call from Benjamin Klein. No, we got a call from Rabbi Groner. The Rebbe answered, Kedai lismacha Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai v'chulu. It's, you can rely on Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, etc. He didn't even say in times of duress. He just said, etc.
That's all it needed.
Yeah. So we went back the next day to the OB-GYN, and he did whatever he did, and he said, what did you do over the weekend? And I said, we got a bracha from the Rebbe. He said, okay, I understand. And Baruch Hashem, that's my 26-year-old, you know, so she's the miracle baby. I wish she'd be a miracle adult, but that's just between you and me. Anyway.
She is.
Yeah, it's a miracle she's still standing. No, I'm joking. I have nowhere. She's not going to listen to this online. I have absolutely no doubt she'll never hear this. Anyway. Okay. V'gampil b'lekushiyus v'tirutzim d'sitcha d'rav v'rucha tumma eshkachem v'rashbi. We also see the Rashbi also was involved with pilpulim and backing and forthing and laws and permitted and unpermitted and tumma and tara. D'aisig b'tuva. He did a lot of that. Gambi yosib b'mayra. Even when he's in the cave, okay, they're buried up to their neck in sand, and they're thinking about the Zohar and all these other things over there, and they're reviewing all of their studies, even there. Adarabah, b'tzchus tsar hamara zacha l'ze, because of the pains of him being in that cave for 13 years, that's why he's the only Tana who's mentioned in every parak of Mishnah. Because he was like, he went through like his own personal Mitzrayim, sitting up to his neck in dirt for 13 years, had his purifying effect on his neshama also, that he spent that time. We see what happened to Rabbi Elazar after 12 years. He walked out, the first guy he saw not learning Torah, he burnt them up with his look. Okay, that's the level of purity that they achieved in the cave. He said to Rabbi Shimon ben Pinchas ben Yair that on every question there are 24 solutions. Pinchas ben Yair was no slouch himself. He also was one of those people whose feet weren't long enough to hit the ground. He said, if I didn't see this with my own eyes, I never would have believed it. V'gam be'emes al-kein ikir askeyem b'mayra ha'yateris ha-mishnayis tafrei shisi shimidra mishnah shahai b'mayim. And we know that what were they doing in the cave? They were sitting and learning mishnayis, 600 sedras of mishnah. Ad Rabbeinu HaKadosh, di'ilu sefer ha-zayir v'tikunim ha'yak yachal ligmar b'chol gimel chadashim. If they're just learning and reviewing the Zohar, they could have done that in a couple of months. So they weren't just reviewing the Kabbalah. For sure they didn't review anything twice. Vagam Amar Rabbeinu Zalmi Yom Shachar Beis Hamikdash Ein LaHakadosh Baruch Hu Ela Dalo Amar Shel Halacha Belvad. And for sure they had to be occupying themselves in Torah, because it says once the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and Shimon Bar Yochai and Eli Rabbi Elazar were in the cave after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, it says, where do you find Hashem? In Halacha. So what are they going to do? They're going to occupy in something where they're not going to find Hashem. So for sure they occupied in Halacha. And so they're, what are they occupying themselves? They're occupying themselves in Isser, Veheter, Tumah, and Tara, Kosher, and Aser. These are things that are Kosher and Pasul. These are products of the Eitz Hadas.
Right.
So we have to understand what this all means. The aid. Another question. Keep that one. Remember it. We'll get to it next week. The aid. Maybe this is just the way the Alter Rebbe did it, so you knew that people are going to have to come back next week. The aid. I can't imagine. The person who got this letter way back when, if I would have gotten a letter in the mail from the Alter Rebbe and it had this inside, man. The aid yesh la hafila hapela upela. He says, now we've got three times the word Pella. We've had already the word Pella. Then we had Pella Nisgava, a higher level Pella. And this is a three one. Lahafli Hapella Upella. This is like a wondrous, wonderful wonder. Eich Esher Shulemaisa Mashiach Lo Yitzrachana Liyeda Halachas Isser Vehetar Vetoma Vatara. We said before the beginning of the answer, quoting the Raya Mehemna, that when Mashiach comes, you're not going to have to worry about things permitted and forbidden, because then there's going to be a paradigm shift, and everything is going to be under the guise of the Eitz HaChayim, and you're not going to have a possibility of doing anything wrong. So he says, how's that possible? How are you not going to need to know those things? Ki eich yishchutu ha-karbonis. How are you going to do sacrifices? How are you going to slaughter an animal? Vigam chulin, and anything else if you want to eat. Im lo yadei hilchus ha drisa v'cholda v'shiya p'soilus v'shchita v'gimas asakin. If you push too hard when you're cutting, if something gets underneath your blade between that and the windpipe, if a person stops in the middle for a certain specific amount of time, which isn't very long, and also the other things involved with it. That's one, two, three. There's two more. And also the laws of what constitutes a nick in the knife. Where do you find that? You find that in Shulchan Aruch. What is that? That's prohibited and permitted. True. This person, Mashiach came. So now what is he going to do? He's going to take a knife and he's going to go slaughter something. And it's a saw. What's it, you know, hello? You can't eat that. It actually says in the Gemara that this is something that really takes a lot of practice learning, that a person should engage in just a cutting action without pushing. It's very hard. It's a technique that has to be learned by Shochtim, because if they push up when they're cutting, you throw the thing away. Okay, and who's going to know? The only one that's going to know
is the
Sheichet.
That's right.
Okay, so that's why we have to have a Yerushimayim Sheichet. V'gam asakim tiyya b'riya v'aymet is b'li pagimas lo'ilam. You got to know the laws, because sometimes it could very well happen that a pagima is, if it's got a little it's called an ukitz, if the nick in the knife is going to be shaped like a half circle, very small half circle. Okay? So, but there's going to be a point at either end of the half circle. That's called a pagima. If it's rounded, meaning it's smooth, such that your fingernail doesn't catch it, but it still goes in a little bit, but there's no catch there, that's called an olive yared. That means it goes up and down. You know, because if you were to look under this blade, look at this blade under a microscope, for example, you would see that it's not absolutely straight across. It's impossible for such a thing. It's going to be very wavy, but you don't feel that's not enough of a thing to make it in, to invalidate the knife. Okay, so the all these laws, va'ayd harba halachas, and then you're looking at the animal itself, gachelev dam, shari surim, other things that you have to do with the animal, Okay, you got to take the chalav, even if you want to offer a sacrifice. Okay, so this sacrifice requires that the chalav be offered separately. So you got to know what's chalav, what's shuman. There's different types of fat. Vegam tumas ames, yeah, there's also going to be the laws of coming in contact with a dead body. It says that when Mashiach comes, so it's going to be such that they're going to say a young man died at 100 years old. He was 100 years old, he was so young. Like they say now, when I was a kid, somebody died when he was 72, they said, oh, he lived for a life, he had a nice life.
Correct.
Nowadays, somebody 72 dies, they go, oh, yeah, a young man. Okay, because it's expected that people are going to live longer than 72, and it's not uncommon that you have people living for longer. So when Mashiach comes, we're going to bump that up 30 years to 100, which means that people are going to be living a long life, longer than that, but that also means they're going to die. So if the Nar is going to die at 100, so maybe, you know, the older guys are going to die 140. But if people die, that means you have Tumas Meis.
Right.
So what's happening over here? V'tzarech liyeda kidiksiv hara yaledis yachdav. It says that there's a pasuk that says a pregnant woman and one that gives birth. Pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Im telet isher b'chol yayim mebiya achas. That it says that a woman could give birth every single day. Okay, which means that you're going to have people giving birth and a woman's going to get tum and tired. Now, there's actually a small pilpul that the Rebbe goes into about this idea of what does it mean that women are going to give birth every day. And because if you're going to have, like, for example, if Tumas Lida is still going to be in effect at that time, then they can't have relations for 7 days for a boy and 14 days for a girl. So how is it possible then that the person's going to be able to conceive and give birth every single day? That was the question. Okay, so the Rebbe kind of skirts around the issue and brings in different opinions and things that he says. And he says, this one kind of shocked me. He says, it says, Mibia Rishoina, Mibia Achas. Okay, the Marshat translates that B'chol Yom Mibia Achas means that she's going to have to bring one sacrifice for all of the times that she gave birth. Okay, as it says, it's possible. The Rebbe says, what this means is, mebiya achas, from one relationship that they're going to have, she's going to get pregnant numerous times. And he gives an example like a chicken, for example. Chickens lay eggs every single day, but chickens don't give birth every single day. They still take 21 days. So this lady is going to conceive. And it says that it is possible, there is an existence, when the Rebbe said it, I think it just happened at that point, there was a mice, the twins were born 3 months apart. Okay, they were twins. One was born a little bit on the premature side, and one was born on the late side. But they were twins. So you'll have such a thing like that also. This one will be ready now, this one will be ready tomorrow, this one will be ready the day after. These poor women. Anyway, but by that time the pains of birth will be over. The laws of forbidden and impurity, they don't change. And you don't have to go into this, you don't have to be a rocket scientist, translation is my own. There's things that are going on in the Gemara Midrashim. The Parah Hilchasa L'Meshicha Eliyahu Ba L'Pshet Kolap HaSfekas Parshat Zu Asid Eliyahu L'Drusha. And he said, well, those questions about how that's all going to happen, that we're going to leave up, this is where we get the answer, that we're going to leave to Eliyahu to answer. Because we really don't have a good grasp of what's really going to happen once Mashiach comes. And most of the times when you ask a question about what's going to be when Mashiach comes, the answer is, I hope we don't have to wait to find out. That's the best as we can do. V'ayit ain't a moving. One more. Masha Kosev, delay your finest in Talmid Chachamim Amar Haratzim. It says in the Zohar over there that the Talmid Chachamim are not going to need the masses to support them. Veloma erev rav the achlin pasul v'tum of iser chas shalom, and not from those unwashed masses that they eat unkosher food and they're donating to the Chabad house to make themselves feel good, whatever it happens to be. It says that doesn't make any sense, because to get onto the Sanhedrin, you had to be so wealthy. How wealthy did you have to be that money meant nothing? So the person was unbribable. So you have all these very wealthy people. During that time, they were not sustained. They were not engaged in fundraising. There was nobody going around Israel collecting money to pay the salaries of the Sanhedrin. They had fields, vineyards, shops, smiths, these kind of things. They sharecroppers that they were renting their fields out to. But still, they sat and they learned all day. And what were they learning? About things that were right, things that were wrong. And the Zugos, the heads of the generations that are mentioned in Pirkei Avos, had thousandfold more students than, say, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and that group of people. So it seems, thus, very bottom line, we're ending off, it seems very perplexing to say that we're not learning the Torah under what could be envisioned as the best modality possible. To say that it's not under Eitz HaChaim, and to say that it's only Eitz HaDas. If you want to know the answers, you'll have to come back next week. To be continued around 286 at the word Ach, and the but on the right side to be continued.